Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on new Caltrans projects, challenges with rural electric vehicle charging, and the Redwood Coast Energy Authority looks at restructuring. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. From the Cal Poly Humboldt University Police Department. On Monday, August 31st, officers with the Cal Poly Humboldt University Police Department arrested 43-year-old Delos Moore following a report of sexual assault that occurred in the Hinod Humolik Residence Hall. Moore is a Cal Poly student who is a resident of that residence hall. Moore was transported to the Humboldt County Correctional Facility and booked for charges of sexual battery and false imprisonment. Moore has since been released on $35,000 bail. Despite being issued a restraining order, which required him to stay away from the residence hall, Moore returned to his room and was arrested by UPD for violating the restraining order. From Humboldt County Public Works. The Humboldt County Department of Public Works will be temporarily closing the Redway Transfer Station on Tuesday, September 22nd, in addition to the Wednesday and Thursday regular closures. To accommodate the next phase of ongoing construction and maintain public safety, the Redway Transfer Station will be temporarily closed. Residents who rely on the transfer station should plan ahead and make alternative arrangements. Additionally, from Public Works in McKinleyville, the Humboldt County Department of Public Works will be closing Dow's Prairie Road at mile marker 2.68 north of the Woody Road intersection beginning Tuesday, September 8th, and will open in November of 2026. Work will consist of a large culvert repair to improve drainage and roadway infrastructure. Dow's Prairie Road remains accessible from both Cranell Road and Clam Beach Road. If you have any concerns or questions regarding these two projects, please call 707-445-7421. From the Eureka Police Department. To help keep our community safe, the Eureka Police Department will have officers on patrol looking for drivers suspected of driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. The additional efforts to prevent impaired driving are part of a national enforcement campaign, Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over. Eureka Police Department will hold a DUI checkpoint Tuesday, September 1st from 6 p.m. to midnight at an undisclosed location within the city of Eureka. From CDFW, the spit fishery at the mouth of the Klamath River will be closed to angling at 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday, September 2nd. Based on California Department of Fish and Wildlife projections of the recreational fall run Chinook salmon harvest, anglers will have met the spit area adult fall run Chinook salmon quota of 15% of the total Klamath River Basin recreational allocation of fish caught below the Highway 101 bridge. Meeting the quota triggers the closure of the spit fishery at the mouth of the Klamath River, within 100 yards of the channel through the sand spit formed at the Klamath River mouth. The spit area is downstream of the Highway 101 bridge, located near the town of Klamath. Recreational fishing will remain closed in this area for the remainder of the 2026 season. From the Mendocino Sheriff's Office. On August 27th, at approximately 9:25 p.m., Mendocino County Sheriff's Office deputies were dispatched to a residence in the 8,000 block of East Road in Redwood Valley regarding a male subject reportedly under the influence of alcohol and causing a disturbance. The reporting party identified the subject as Joshua Viara, who sheriff deputies knew to have a misdemeanor warrant for his arrest out of Mendocino County for violation of a court order. They were advised that Viara was breaking and throwing items inside the residence and acting violently. The California Highway Patrol was requested to assist. Prior to the sheriff's deputies arriving at the scene, Viara left the residence. A sheriff's deputy contacted the reporting party at the residence, who reported that Viara had been consuming alcohol, punching doors, and acting aggressively. The deputies then subsequently located Viara along East Road and observed objective signs consistent with alcohol intoxication. They informed Viara that he was under arrest and gave him lawful commands to surrender. Viara refused to comply and became increasingly confrontational. During the encounter, Viara clenched his fist, assumed an aggressive stance, and moved towards the deputy. Viara made statements that he intended to physically resist arrest while refusing to comply with lawful commands to surrender. Then, after a sheriff's deputy displayed his taser and continued communicating with Viara for several minutes, Viara ultimately complied with the commands and was taken into custody. He was arrested on an outstanding misdemeanor warrant, threatening a public officer, public intoxication, and obstructing a peace officer. Viara was transported to the Mendocino County Jail, where he's being held. From CDFW. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is pleased to present the California Bobcat Population Monitoring Project's Report of Findings, the most extensive and comprehensive bobcat population survey ever conducted in California, and possibly anywhere in the United States, and one that leveraged the best available scientific tools and techniques in the process. The 140-page report was developed over 5 years and found bobcat populations distributed throughout the entire state with the exception of major urban areas and portions of the Central Valley subject to intense agricultural production. The report estimates a stable statewide population of 62,000 bobcats. Two previous statewide estimates from the 1970s and the 1980s, which relied on less rigorous techniques, estimated 61,000 and 74,000 bobcats, respectively. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. The executive director of a nonprofit that assists the transition to electric vehicles fielded some feedback during a local online presentation. Daniel Mintz reports.
A nonprofit group that incentivizes development of zero-emissions infrastructure is at work in outlying areas of the state, like Humboldt County. The Clean Start organization promotes the transition to electric vehicles, or EVs, and is developing recommendations on how small businesses in Northern California can get involved. In an August 26 online presentation to the Community Economic Resilience Consortium, Thomas Hall, the group's executive director, said surveying is being done in the region to, quote, get feedback on how we can help with the transition to electrification and decarbonization of transportation. His group's work aligns with the state's goal of 100% zero-emissions new vehicle sales by 2035, which Hall described as very ambitious, especially when it comes to accommodating EV use in rural areas.
We want to figure out, you know, where can small businesses move the needle? Where can small businesses participate in this? And where can, you know, maybe a little bit of support go a long way? Now, California right now, it's between 1 in 5 to 1 in 4 new vehicles sold are electric vehicles. That works out to about 6% of the state as vehicles being zero emissions vehicles. But most of the EVs are not, and the charging are not in rural areas, which, you know, makes adoption hard. It's a chicken or egg sort of thing. If you don't see EV chargers or know where they are, you're not going to buy one. And then you also have to think on the other side where, you know, how do you install an EV charger if you don't see EVs?
All electric vehicles face challenges in areas like the North Coast, where routes like 299 and 101 have 70-plus mile stretches without EV charging stations. Unreliable chargers and the high cost of home charger installations are also daunting. Clean Start's recommendations include a collaborative prize competition for small businesses that can develop cheaper home charger installs, a state-supported local EV buyer concierge network to assist EV buyers, and a rural EV-ready workforce initiative to train and retain local EV technicians. Another recommendation is to promote hybrid EVs that have gas backup ranges of 300 miles or more as a first step toward EV transition. In this exchange with Hall, Humboldt Hill resident Lila Roberts said a hybrid is the only viable choice until charging is more common and more time effective.
I have wanted an EV for years and years and years, and I cannot justify it given how much time I spend driving in genuinely remote parts of the state. Don't want to be stuck, don't want to be delayed in some cases, so have been going for hybrids instead. And so the greater the spread of charging stations, especially rapid charging, the more likely I am to say, okay, it's time.
So do you think about when you're doing that, how often do you think about, or is this a concern, how long it takes to charge? Like,
yes,
historically it's taken it can take a while. So
yeah, I mean, picture, you know, I'm about to start driving back and forth 5 hours one way on a regular basis, and adding half an hour, 20 minutes to that is it's not fun.
Other consortium members had similar feedback. Jamie Winters, a local outreach specialist with the state's Office of the Small Business Advocate, said the geographic range of her work bars EV use.
So I have 16 of the most rural counties, I would say. And I wouldn't trust having an all-electric vehicle any day out in that territory. If it was a hybrid, yes. But even running out of gas, to be honest, is sometimes a threat out there because there's just not a lot of service stations. So you really need to know where you're going. And plus, a lot of time you don't even have cell phone reception to be like, where's the next charger? You know what I mean? Like, you need to know those roads and how long those distances are. And you can lose cell service for like hours on end with very few people coming by to save you. And so I, even with the option sometimes at the state to do an electric vehicle, I literally can't do it because of the infrastructure of the far rural north.
Another issue is unavailable or limited home charging capability during grid power outages related to wildfires and storms. Greg Foster of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, the meeting's host, said hybrids are likely to be the most viable choice in rural areas for a while. He said, quote, until we get to that point where you have charging infrastructure that's ubiquitous, it's really hard for those of us who live and work in these very rural areas to really go all in. In response to the commentary, Hall said, quote, I'm here to listen and get feedback and put something good together for people. During his presentation, he noted the region's gains. In Humboldt, the Redwood Coast Energy Authority has developed charging stations at 23 locations throughout the county, including 11 fast charging sites, and offers EV rebates. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Caltrans awards millions in funding to several District 1 projects. KMUD News reports.
California is investing in transportation projects across the state to improve highway safety, strengthen infrastructure against extreme weather, and make it easier for people to walk, bike, and use transit. California Transportation Secretary Tokes Omishokan says these investments fuel the state's mission to deliver a transportation system that continues to serve all Californians regardless of how they travel. He adds, quote, the action taken today supports Governor Newsom's vision to improve the state's infrastructure and further prepare and equip us against the current and future effects of climate change, end quote. Several of these projects will be taking place in our backyard, some of which include Eureka Slough Bridge Project, which is receiving $23 million in emergency funding in response to a routine inspection in April, where they found severely deteriorated foundation piles under the southbound bridge. Because this is the busiest stretch of state highway in Humboldt County, Caltrans says immediate action was needed to prevent structural failure and protect public safety. Work is actively progressing and expected to wrap up its current phase within the coming months. The US 101 from the Route 1 junction to the Humboldt County line was awarded $30 million in efforts to fund safety and structural upgrades along a rugged, vulnerable stretch of the Redwood Highway, including pavement rehabilitation, improved drainage, modernized guardrails, and slope and rockfall mitigation. The Route 254 bridges near Wyatt and Red Crest are receiving $12.3 million for bridge construction and fish passage projects along the Avenue of the Giants. The project will replace aging culverts with full-span bridges designed to restore natural stream flow. Cooks Valley Fish Passage Bridge Project will receive $8.1 million. This particular funding targets the Hartsook Creek area, replacing an outdated box culvert with a full-span bridge. This will allow threatened and endangered species such as the Chinook salmon, coho salmon, and steelhead trout to safely navigate the creek and access high-quality upstream habitat. In Holmes Flat, another $13.2 million was awarded for Route 254 drainage and fish passages projects. This is another Avenue of the Giants project in Humboldt County aimed at fixing failing drainage infrastructure while restoring habitat corridors for native wildlife. Reporting with KMA News, this is Bridget Carstensen.
The Redwood Coast Energy Authority is considering municipalization, KMA News reports. The Redwood Coast Energy Authority, also known as RCEA, is looking at multiple options and pathways to solve current budgetary issues. As reported previously, the Energy Authority had to raise electrical generation rates this year, making their generation rates more expensive than PG&E for the first time. Traditionally, customers have chosen the RCEA over PG&E due to automatically being opted in as a new customer, potentially better rates, and because RCEA delivers 100% renewable power to the electrical grid. All customers currently have the choice to opt out fully and only receive PG&E services. The Redwood Coast Energy Authority August 27th board meeting included a discussion of a potential move to municipalization that would likely entail the Energy Authority taking on more of the current role PG&E serves in the region. Currently, RCEA is a community choice aggregator who only generates power to supply PG&E's private grid. Richard Engel, Director of Power Resources for RCEA, spoke on current challenges of being a community choice aggregator, aka a CCA model.
We all know from what we've talked about in past meetings that investor-owned utilities just really continue to make it hard for the CCA model to succeed, and especially with the PCIA have been really threatening our financial viability.
Richard Engel, Director of Power Resources for the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, then detailed different community power options and different ways of operating that the RCEA could consider.
So there are several different varieties of public power. There's the CCAs like us. As you know, we only handle the generation end. We don't own the poles and the wires. And participation is opt-out, which largely explains why we have such very high participation rates. There's one kind of special case that I'll mention, which we only just learned about doing this research, which is there is one community aggregator, the city of Cerritos in Southern California. It's different than a CCA. It was created by some special legislation that was around one particular power plant in the cities adjacent to it. They also do not own the poles and wires. They're different from us in that it's opt-in participation. So you have to choose to be in it. And when they first started, they weren't offering residential service. They were only offering service to certain commercial customers. Our understanding is that they're now expanding that to include residential customers as well. And then there's all these other varieties of public power where they do own the poles and the wires. So they're more, you know, full service utilities. Municipal utilities, aka POUs, or publicly owned utilities, are a single city like Palo Alto, where I used to work, or Reading. You know, we lost one of our employees a while back to the Reading Municipal Utility. There's municipal utility districts, and a lot of these, you know, municipal utility districts and public utility districts are not necessarily just electricity. They can provide other utility services. I grew up in the East Bay. East Bay MUD, East Bay Municipal Utility District, is one of the larger examples of this in California. Typically includes at least one city, but can have other jurisdictions like unincorporated areas served by it. East Bay MUD is a water utility. Then there's public utility districts. Trinity is an example of this, that's providing electricity. This is multiple jurisdictions and generally does not include incorporated cities, although it could, but it's not a necessary ingredient for that model. And then there's rural electric cooperatives, of which there are, I think, more than 900 in the United States, but here in California, only 3 of them exist.
Municipalization is no easy task, and much of the presentation focused on the difficulty of the Redwood Coast Energy Authority converting from a community choice aggregator to a model that gives the authority more control over how its power is distributed. As the presentation noted, less than 10% of attempts to convert CCAs to municipal power systems have been successful. Discussion by the Redwood Coast Energy Authority Board after the presentation presented doubts on feasibility of full municipalization. But multiple board members liked the idea of a partial transition. That included the possibility of a municipal utility district in denser population zones around Humboldt Bay and an electrical co-op in rural areas, which would be member-owned. Here's some comments on the idea of a split urban versus rural proposal from the RCEA board.
Reference what you're talking about, the rural versus the urban, and I would say you would definitely want a hybridized version. I mean, if PG&E could get out of serving rural communities, it would do that. And that should tell you something about maybe why you would maybe want to do it or not do it. They serve those communities at a loss. And so just like we as the county, you know, the further away we get from our more dense populations, the more a road costs per capita, you know, and the equation becomes upside down pretty fast. And so focusing on your city boundaries is probably your best bet, and probably even politically your best bet too.
It's so daunting, but I appreciate the look into it. You know, I think exploring something more like a regional, you know, I mean, it's like from Marin to Del Norte County, you know, so there's more purchasing power, more money. A little old Humboldt County probably can't do it, but I think I agree with the urban and then like a rural co-op. If we were to explore it more, a lot less lines here and a lot less fire hazard.
While municipalization and potential changes to how the Redwood Coast Energy Authority operates are years away, conversations are beginning now to attempt to deal with future issues and to ensure financial stability for the authority. Any restructuring that could save RCEA customers from paying consistent fees to PG&E via the current power charge indifference adjustment on each monthly bill, a charge to represent the cost of PG&E maintaining current electrical grid infrastructure, could represent significant savings. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. A California bill that aims to stop the practice of jailing people for minor infractions is now on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. Suzanne Potter has more.
A California bill that aims to stop the practice of jailing people for minor infractions is now on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. Assembly Bill 2122 would prevent courts from issuing bench warrants for a failure to appear in court or to pay a fine for a low-level traffic or civil offense. Bill co-author Assemblyman Josh Lowenthal says courts should rely on bank levies, wage garnishments, or tax intercepts instead.
Well, it doesn't make financial sense because arrests often cost taxpayers more to arrest somebody than what they actually owe. Taking someone into custody takes limited law enforcement personnel and resources away from the more serious cases.
The California Sheriff's Department Association opposes the bill, arguing it would remove an important tool that encourages people to appear in court or pay their fines. This measure would apply to driving offenses such as a broken taillight or an illegal U-turn, or to civil infractions like sleeping on a public bench or fishing without a license. Jhumpa Bhattacharya is with the nonprofit Maven Collaborative, which co-sponsored the bill. She says jailing people over minor offenses can unfairly cause them to lose their job and be unable to pay rent, destabilizing communities. And she says poverty and over-policing in neighborhoods of color means this is an issue of racial and economic justice.
In San Francisco County, even though Black people make up just about 6% of the population, about 50% of those who are arrested for failure to appear were Black. In Los Angeles County, 90% of the thousands of folks that were arrested were Black or Latinx.
Bill supporters say many people who fail to show up for a court date have trouble getting time off work, have transportation issues, or are afraid to encounter ICE agents. A dozen counties in California already forego the use of bench warrants for minor infraction. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also, thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz, and our assistant director, Bridget Karstensen. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. If you have issues important to you, that deserve more attention, or there stories we're missing that you're curious about, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.